Audio version of Michael Leitman's blog. June 26, 2020. Medium published my new article COVID Engendered Humanity 2.0. Ask any baby boomer where they were when they first heard that JFK was shot, and they will tell you. They will never forget that tragic moment in American history. In many ways, so was September 11, 2001, when the World Trade Center towers came down after being hit by hijacked passenger jets. There are moments in people's lives that alter them forever. The onset of COVID-19 was not as sudden as either event, nor as dramatic, but its impact will dwarf that of any event in the history of humankind. The rules of the new world are simple. The single most important goal is solidarity. We may not be aware of it just yet, but the coronavirus has engendered a new humanity, humanity 2.0, if you will. Like all deliveries, it is painful, and the newborn is forced out from its warm and protective womb. Like all pregnancies, we have been feeling the mounting pressures to emerge to a new world, and new way of life. We did not know it was a new humanity because we were in the dark. But the pressures inside the old humanity were growing unbearable, and Earth, our womb, could barely keep us in it. Now that we have come out, it is time to open our eyes and look at the reality around us. The world where we have entered is very different from the one we'd known. It operates on opposite principles from the ones we'd worked by. In the new world, everything is connected. The virus taught that. It taught us that you must wear a mask not because you're sick, but because you don't want to make your loved ones sick. It taught us that only if we all think of each other's health we will be healthy, and if we don't all do it, we will never be healed from the virus. The virus showed us painful pictures of farmers spilling milk and breaking eggs on the floor to keep their price tag profitable, while millions of Americans often go hungry. We knew that this was capitalism, we all agreed to it. But in the world of humanity 2.0, there can be no such thing. The rules of the new world are simple. The single most important goal is solidarity. People work in mutual responsibility because they want to build concern for one another. Instead of self-absorption, friendship and affection reign high, and people derive pleasure from their union. Since union is the utmost pleasure, anything that does not promote it is undesirable. Essential jobs are those that allow people to socialize without interruption. Other trades and businesses will vanish for lack of demand. There is no need to forcefully foreclose any business, but there is also no need to support businesses that cannot get through the transition period. If people do not need it, there is no point keeping it alive. Once the cleanup process is complete, our world will be full of people who work happily at jobs that everyone appreciates and values, while other people spend their time socializing and enhancing solidarity and union in society. In the world of humanity 2.0, the most diverse societies will be the most thriving and thrilling to live in. Their unions will be the most enriching precisely because of the diversity among their members. People will flock to such societies and will appreciate the diversity and uniqueness of each individual, since what one can contribute to society, no other person can. There will be no racism, no crime, no loneliness, and no violence in humanity 2.0. There will be no need to curb them, since people will feel that any act against another person contradicts the goal of unity and ousts the perpetrator from society. And no one wants to be ejected from society. Granted, we are not there yet. But we are getting there fast. We can resist it if we want, but it will only make the birth more painful. Naturally, we are afraid, but look at the world around us, it is quickly becoming a place where we will not want to live. If we join forces and usher in the new humanity, the transition will be smooth and easy. And if my prediction seems unrealistic, think if less than 6 months ago you would believe that the whole world can go on lockdown for weeks on end, that anarchists can take over entire sections of a major city in America, or that a big city in America with a high crime rate would disband its police force. Changes happen, but we can choose how they will happen. My new article on LinkedIn: need a job? Consider being a connection coach. There used to be liftmen who would press the right button for you. And before there were refrigerators, there were icemen who would cut large blocks of ice and deliver them to customers. The world of work is in constant evolution, and these days faster than ever. Now, thanks to the coronavirus, it has accelerated from very fast, and accelerating, to virtually immediate. Humanity has reached a phase of transformation from a self-centered mindset to a collaborative mindset, and those who will help others into it will be the happiest and busiest people in the world. Everything that is not essential business is struggling or already in various stages of elimination. COVID-19 has shocked people to the point where they either lost the drive to shop or are forced to save what they can because they've lost their jobs. Yet, a bit like the end of the dinosaur era, the demise of antiquated species gives rise to new ones. It may be hard to conceive, but this process is already happening. A slew of new professions is in the making, and most of them will all belong to one area: human connections. We've dealt before with mental illnesses, ADHD, and various forms of behavioral anomalies. We've hopelessly dealt with mending broken relationships and futilely fought against bullying. But these are not the traits that will emerge tomorrow. Tomorrow's experts in human connections will be people who are savvy in the rules of the emerging civilization, a humanity whose people are all connected and dependent on each other. We've never felt accountable for all of humanity, but today we can settle for nothing less, and learning how to do this successfully requires knowledge and skills. Coaches in human connection will be people who know how to take a group of 10 or so complete strangers, who feel no affinity toward each other, and sometimes the opposite, and turn them into best friends within an hour. These coaches, who will practice integral education, i.e., will know how to help people feel comfortable, accepted, and able to fully express themselves without jeopardizing everybody else's ability or desire to do the same. People who will participate in these trainings will find that if you want to realize your full potential, you will be able to do it only if you operate alongside other people, each of whom contributes their utmost to the success of a common goal, the unity of the group. Sports teams know that if you want to be a champion, you have to sacrifice yourself for the good of the team. IE is different. You don't sacrifice anything, and you always receive 10 times more than what you gave. And the best part about it is that there are no losers in IE. Everybody wins, since unity is achieved only when everyone wants everyone else to succeed. We've never tried this approach among us, but now we have no choice. Humanity has reached a phase of transformation from a self-centered mindset to a collaborative mindset, and those who will help others into it will be the happiest and busiest people in the world. The Times of Israel published my new article, "The COVID-19 Symptom Reserved for Jews." As early as March 14, Eric Cortilissa wrote on The Times of Israel that as the coronavirus spreads across the globe, a new conspiracy theory has been brewing on the fringes of society: the Jews are behind it. By March 31, it was no longer on the fringes. An internal foreign ministry report warns of a sharp rise in anti-Semitic posts around the world as a result of the coronavirus pandemic, stated Itamar Yekna on Ynet News. Since then, matters have gone from bad to worse as Jews have been increasingly targeted in relation to COVID-19. On April 20, Reuters quoted a Tel Aviv University report which found that the coronavirus crisis was stoking anti-Semitism worldwide. And on May 13, the independent media organization NPR stated that American Jews are finding themselves in a historically familiar position, scapegoated for a plague. Finally, on June 23, another report by Tel Aviv University has found that the pandemic unleashed a unique worldwide wave of anti-Semitism, and that the new wave of anti-Semitism includes a range of libels that have one common element: the Jews, the Zionists, and or the State of Israel are to blame for the pandemic and or stand to gain from it. I do not doubt the accuracy of the reports, but I certainly don't think that this worldwide wave of anti-Semitism is in any way unique. Nor is it unexpected. It is a pattern that repeats itself with every single plight and crisis that the world encounters, just as we are seeing that the people are already blaming Israel for teaching the US police the knee chokehold that killed George Floyd. The Jews have been, are, and will be blamed for all the troubles in the world. And as time passes, more and more people will do so openly. At some point soon, the number of accusers will reach a critical mass, or the socio-political circumstances will be just right, or both, and the landslide will begin. The world will determine that to save itself, it must get rid of the Jews. I have been warning about it for nearly two decades, I have written two books about it, see links below, and now it is coming to pass. Yet, as long as the landslide has not begun, we can still reverse the trend. We must remember that the darker the world becomes, the more it turns its anger at the Jews. It is doing so precisely because it expects Jews to dispel the darkness. Today, the dark shade encroaching on the world is hatred. Jews are being blamed for spreading hatred, racism, diseases, and every conceivable, and inconceivable, evil. The Jews will not be able to refute these accusations, however irrational, precisely because irrational feelings don't need rationality. To refute the accusations, we must make the nations feel that we are not spreading hate, but love. And to do that, we must create love among us and project it to the world. As we can see, the world does not want the love of the Jews, it does not want our genius, our moralism, our values, or anything to do with us. It feels that we are spreading hatred, and no one wants to be around people who spread hatred. So if we can't show love to the world, we can and must show love to one another. Our nation is an ancient one. It was forged thousands of years ago by a man who dedicated his life to spreading kindness and love. His name was Abraham. His descendants continued his legacy, and centuries of famine and slavery had brought them to the realization that they must love one another as themselves, as one man with one heart. Only when they achieved that profound level of unity were they declared a nation, and immediately thereafter, they were tasked with sharing that unity with the entire world, with being a light unto nations. For centuries, their progeny had fought against internal elements within the nation that sought to spread hatred and alienation, so they could carry on Abraham's legacy and spread the light of love. For centuries, they won, until they lost 2,000 years ago and the nation was exiled from Jerusalem because of baseless, unfounded hatred. Since then, we have been vilified, demonized, ridiculed, despised, and loathed throughout the centuries and the world over. Even when the nations welcomed us, it was in order to exploit us. And as soon as they had no use for us, they got rid of us. Indeed, what good are we if we are not spreading love, if we are not a light unto nations? We complain that judging us by a different standard than the rest of the world is anti-Semitism. But the truth is that we have never been judged by the same standard as the rest of the world because we are not expected to do what the rest of the world does. The world does not expect love to come from anyone but the Jews, and unless we forge it among ourselves and spread it, humanity will see no reason to keep us on this planet. We are running out of time. The chasm among us is vast, and growing. But we have no choice. If we want to save ourselves, we must unite above our disunity, above our hatred for each other. We must do it not because we are stronger together, but because when we are together, the world feels that we are spreading unity, and this is all it expects us to do. And if my words sound irrational, remember that so is anti-Semitism, so give my message a chance in your heart, for our sake. Recognize your evil inclination? Question: how can you recognize your evil if your very nature does not allow it? Every moment a person justifies his or her actions. Answer: absolutely right. Therefore, the force with which we advance and develop spiritually is called faith above reason, that is the ascent above our egoism. How do we do that? By placing myself in the group, in the ten, and try to dissolve in it. In this way I rise above myself. Only in this way. If you do not have a group, you will not be able to do it, and this is where your problem will be. From Cab TV's Fundamentals of Kabbalah, April 19, 2020. Everything is attained through contrast. The development of the truth from the opposite is the cornerstone in the wisdom of Kabbalah. If we wish to understand something, we need to understand the phenomenon and the state opposite to it. Otherwise, we will not feel anything. If there were only darkness or only light, we could not discern them. When there is some correlation between them, then we feel darkness and light, and it is the same in every other aspect. So the most important thing we have is the ability to sharply feel contrasting phenomena, and as a result to build sensations and to determine and sharpen the definitions. An expert is someone who has many contrasting attributes, emotions, and lots of information, and who can integrate and place different things one in contrast to the other, and thus learn. Question: does this mean that I don't need to be afraid of the dark? Answer: of course not. We cannot determine and define the light without the dark. This is the reason that we were created in the dark, in our ego, because it is only thanks to the ego that grows continuously, that we can reveal the resistance and the contrast to the Creator, and then to resemble Him. Comment: everything is the opposite according to the wisdom of Kabbalah. According to what you say, a person needs to become a great egoist, while it is usually considered a bad thing by most people. My response: it is written, he who is greater than his friend, his desire is even greater. We actually measure everything thanks to the size of the egoistic desire by which we measure the upper light, its impact on us and the changes it brings about, and even the Creator himself. Question: does this mean that the ego will continue to grow and we will not be able to do anything about it? Answer: we don't need to do anything with it. On the contrary, let it grow. This is the reason that this wisdom is called the wisdom of Kabbalah, which means the wisdom of how to receive whatever we can take for ourselves, but with the intention to bestow. This is the paradox. We will gradually reach that. From Cab TV's Fundamentals of Kabbalah, December 15, 2019. How can you enjoy learning Kabbalah? Question: how does one enjoy learning Kabbalah? Answer: only by understanding the greatness of what you are doing. After all, you are studying the greatest science not only in our world, not only in the universe, but in all the worlds. This science reveals the structure of the entire universe to you, introduces it to you, and gets you into it. At the same time, you lose the sense of life and death, and you can be simultaneously in all properties and at all levels of the universe. When you understand this, think about it, and do it, you see that you are dealing with the greatest thing in the worlds, and you become acquainted with the only governing higher force, the Creator. What could be better? This should fill you with pride and joy. From Cab TV's Fundamentals of Kabbalah, April 26, 2020. Patience is needed. Question: why have my feelings become inoperative? Previously, feelings came involuntarily, but now I have to ask the Creator even for love for my relatives. Answer: it is very good. You are being taught what it means to feel right. So you can't be like a child, either crying or being happy. Now you are beginning to collect other feelings that are more subtle, different. And then it all comes out. Patience is needed. From Cab TV's Fundamentals of Kabbalah, April 26, 2020. Human zoos. Question. There was a phenomenon known as human zoos even in the 18th and 19th centuries, where indigenous peoples inhabiting Africa and the interior of America were brought to Europe and America, and civilized European or American society came to observe what they termed wild barbarians. In France, more than 20 million people visited such a zoo within a few months to observe such a curiosity. In the places of their permanent residence, the indigenous peoples could wear loincloths and eat raw food, and in Europe and America, of course, there were other conditions, but they were forced to wear loincloths, eat raw dog meat, and more. This caused wild delight in the audience. So who are the savages? Answer: these are the French people who went to look at those who were brought from Africa. Question: why does such a bestial, savage desire arise in a civilized person? Answer: it is natural for a person to learn and wonder about other forms of life. Question: do you think that this is acceptable? Answer: no. I believe that we should bring, for example, Africans to Europe, pay them normally, feed them normally, give them everything they need, and they can work for half a day or for a day as primitive people who live their own African way of life. Question: what does a person learn from observing primitive forms of human life? Answer: I think it all depends on how you present it to them. The indigenous forms of life are actually the healthiest, most natural ones. They make a person feel close to nature. They are built on very good principles of mutual respect, trust, communication, and consent, not at all like the ones that existed, for example, in France. Of course, the way they present it, look at the barbarians that we brought you, so pay your money, this is of course the wrong approach, and there is not much to talk about. This is a barbaric approach. However, to show a way of life and explaining how it is closer to nature, to what extent these people are closer to each other, how they understand each other, how they communicate, and how it is nice and good for them, could deeply impress Europeans and show them the life they once left, what they have come, and what they ultimately benefited from with what they have with today's lifestyle, with all the modern chaos compared to the simple primitive community, which gives us inner freedom, comfort, and confidence. Question: can modern people apply the relations that exist among indigenous peoples to themselves? Answer: how? They have absolutely no society. When I was in Paris, there was absolutely nothing natural about their relationships. On the contrary, everything is very practical and primitive. I do not want to criticize, but compared to a simple African village, which also has several thousand people, the relationships between people is, especially now, I am talking about the way it was 20 or 30 years ago when I was there, of course, very different, not in favor of Paris. Question: where then can children who are brought to such artificial conditions get the natural ways of life, natural relationships, and learn something? Answer: we know that modern people nevertheless gravitate to what was once in their families, among their ancestors. So it all can be done, but not in order to teach modern people what primitive societies were, rather on the contrary, to show modern people this so they would see how primitive they are. Question: can a modern person see the value of indigenous relationships if he does not have a point of perception of correct relationships? Answer: a modern person sees nothing. He sees only what is currently on sale, where something is cheaper. He sees only what is shoved before his eyes, nothing more. You have to put something in front of him, rub his nose in it, and that's what he sees. This is all done by the media, advertising, and so on. Question: at the beginning of the last century, a secular person, an anthropologist, brought an African pygmy to the United States and put in a cage with other animals, chimpanzees and orangutans, and presented him as the missing link in man's evolution, thereby implying that these tribes were closer to apes than civilized white people. Naturally, The public expressed their indignation and the man was released. But 6 years later, he committed suicide because he could not integrate into American conditions. What distinguishes the person close to nature from the civilized people so that he cannot integrate into the iron conditions of the city, of civilization? Answer: it's hard to say. We cannot understand it. We can only see from the results that our life in the past centuries, after all, it was our life too, was so different from modern life that we cannot perceive this system of relationships, the system of values, and the implementation of plans compared to what it was before. It is very strange to combine a gap of several hundred years in this way. Imagine that you invite, say, King Arthur here. We have completely different concepts and values. So, it is not possible. This cannot be compared. But, on the other hand, our entire civilization, in principle, is moving away from the natural one. It turns out that we are moving away from our nature. We have created some kind of artificial shell for ourselves, that we exist in. And this is not natural, it does not lead us to a good life. We see how much we are suffering, but we cannot do anything about it. We become included in this same nature, in this race, in this artificial machine, and we must run along with it. Question: the other day, you were asked if a person has ascended or descended in spiritual development throughout our entire history. You said that in absolute value one has ascended, but in fact, a person seems to have descended as he reveals the truth within himself. What is the difference between the initial development of a person when he lives in natural conditions, he is all open, and trust and mutual understanding reign in his tribe, and our point when a modern person descends, in fact, in his development? What are their differences and similarities? Answer: in the vector of development. The fact is that, let's say, a few thousand years ago, we could have gone by a completely different development, not egoistic, but by rising above our nature, contrary to it, where we would have preferred good connection between us, would have been together as one family, would have looked after this, and would have taken care not to separate. If we behaved in this way, we would have gone in a different direction of development compared to today. We would have come to a completely different state. Today, humanity would be one big, kind family. And we would not have the state as we have now when we only think about how we can earn at the expense of the others, how we can rise above the others, how I compare my life to my neighbors, and so on. We would have no competition, no murders, none of this would have happened. There would be good, normal shelter and there would be normal communication between us if we had followed this path of development. However, we chose to develop egotistically, the way our wild nature pushes us. That is, in fact, we went on developing as animals, obeying our nature, and here is where it led us. Thus, we have nothing to be proud of. Today we are the most wildly developed animals and are living in a big zoo. Question: how can a person find that primordial, natural person in himself to begin the ascent to a new development? Answer: to do this, we need to go back to those times and start again. This is impossible. But we can recognize the evil of our current state and start a new path. Starting now. Question: what will a modern human zoo turn into then? Answer: we will take what we need from it. This will be sorted in a natural way. We only need to change our attitude toward each other. That is, to stop being wild animals relative to each other, who only want to destroy each other and try to build relationships with each other using force. We must rise above this and build relationships based on coming, on the correct involvement with each other. And then we will see that the world becomes different. This world will be like one family. But not like a modern family. There will be no competition, there will be mutual assistance, and everything will be just to make everyone feel good. Exactly this common care that everyone would feel good is essential for all of us. But we do not have it. We must acquire it. It exists in nature. At the center of nature, this feeling exists. But how will we achieve it, feel it, discover it for ourselves, and live with this star in our hearts. This must be learned. From CAB TV's News with Dr. Michael Leitman, January 14, 2020. New Life 1183. Social Values.
Hello and thanks for joining us on the New Life Show with Dr. Michael Leitman. Hello, Dr. Leitman. Hello, everyone. Hello, Nitza Mazoz. Hello. And today we'd like to talk about social values. We're social creatures, and the society that we live in, there are different kinds of values that change over time and from country to country. And we'd like to take a deeper look into this topic. Be with us. It's going to be really interesting. Nitza, please. So, social values are like a kind of a lighthouse that shines or lights from afar some kind of an exalted goal or direction. A social value is usually a value that society aspires for, even if it can't exactly realize it, but mutual respect, trust, loving your homeland, contributing to your nation, and so on and so forth. Many values. These are values that every society defines their own values. Sometimes it's done consciously and sometimes it happens naturally. You don't really talk about these values, you don't define them. But still, people in that society get the message of what are the social, leading social values, and they really try to adapt themselves to those values. Many times people adopt social values that seem exalted to them, trying to implement them in their life. This becomes the goal that they aspire for. Our way of thinking and behavior are influenced by this. In short, it has a vast impact. The question is, how does a social value form in society from your perspective? Well, it's not from my perspective, but from a general perspective, I'd say that all the social values come from the family. Because in the past, we lived in families, grandparents, parents, children, grandchildren, you know, an extended family. A society in which we're all close, and therefore we're all interconnected. And naturally, all of us care for each other. And therefore, the social values, it's not that they're social, but they're family values. It's a natural value, actually, right? Yeah, of course. It's something that we didn't really have to talk about, but everyone would show others the measure to which he's with them, loves them, helps them, because they do the same for him. And we're all interdependent, and therefore it was really important for us to keep these values and develop them. And there was no need for having like a ministry for social relations or something like that. Today we laugh at it, but in the past, it was something natural that you had from the family. Today, even in the family, you have to have some kind of a ministry that will teach you how to treat each other favorably. And therefore, this is where this entire matter comes to us from. Afterwards, as families started to grow, so much so that they started growing apart a bit. Even wars broke out between them in different hostile forms. And so here we already had to talk about social values, nonetheless, because all those families that don't feel that close, that they're like one family, but still they're a nation. And so it's good for them to keep together. to stay together because you have enemies and so on and different hardships that you have to deal with throughout life. So it's good for us to trust each other, strengthen each other. And then really social values started, where it's no longer inside the family, and maybe it's not even the same nation, that people started moving from place to place, settled down in foreign places, even in foreign religions and cultures, looking completely different, and here there's already a problem. How do we get along? And therefore, they've developed different kinds of philosophies, psychologies, habits in society, that's how they're called, social values. And this is something that started a long time ago. From the entire process that humanity went through in moving from place to place, entire nations, countries, like with the Mongolians that did it, and the invasion from China, from here, from there, from Africa, into Europe and other places. And therefore, humanity had to develop these kinds of things. In the past, this is how nations were, because we have no choice and we have to live that way. In the past, it was also done by rulers, that it's good for a ruler to keep a mixed society, because this is how he can be in power and control his monarchy. And therefore, all social values, they're all based not on the natural feeling of the family, but on an artificial feeling, because we have to protect ourselves from some more external enemy. And in general, it's good for us to be one way or another, because there isn't a real connection between us. Sometimes there is no connection even within the same nation. So it could be for the sake of connection within that country. Or if not the country, then the world. Because one way or another, we want to live our life. The need to survive, this is what pushes us to every time raise social values. And this is how it is to this day. Today the world is becoming very open. There is no problem to move from one place to another. There is a mixture of languages. Really, Babylon, the entire world is Babylon. And so, once again, we have a problem. How do we treat each other? How do we relate to one another? And so, there are a few, let's say, big offices like UNESCO, like the UN, like other international organizations. And it's a wonder, really. When I traveled to Switzerland, I think, in Geneva, there, practically in every building, there are representatives of international organizations. So it's very interesting. Radio organization, TV organization, writers organization, this, that. The entire city, well, a large part of the city, is filled with representatives of different organizations that get money and space and so on in order to arrange the correct relations between us, between countries and nations, according to the right social values, in order for us to be able to exist with one another and not to eat each other alive. I remember it was really interesting. I was driving slowly around. I saw such signs that really was very interesting. What is it exactly? Organizations that are there in order to connect humanity into one system. Even the frequencies that we use, everything. An organization for radiation. Organization for land, for everything. Because today humanity has to determine a certain standard according to which it determines not only its relations but its ability to exist altogether. Because if we enter each other's area, not like before, like you could only trespass someone's land or something. Today I have frequencies, the flow of water, chemistry, this, that. And therefore, we have to scrutinize our social relations more and more. You just described how humanity developed from where we were. Families, small families, larger families, families parted, nations started moving from place to place and so on. I want to ask, can a society exist without social values? Naturally, only. But then it's not a society, but it's a family. So a society can't live without social values. No. A society is where you have no sense of belonging to one family. That you're not naturally connected. So society is specifically an ungathering of people that don't naturally feel connected, and because of that, you need values that will protect them, that will build the relationships, correct, right relationships between them. Yeah. And I also felt that you were describing kind of evolution of relations. According to the evolution that we human beings went through, so did our values from being completely natural. That is how we were born in a family. We understood that this what keeps us, protects us. Gradually we started developing our values up to the point where today we're like Babylon. And when you said Babylon, from what I understand, when we look at it through the prism of values, does it mean that we actually lost our values? This is exactly what it says in the Torah, that they were as one nation with one language. They were a family. And suddenly, the languages mixed. They stopped understanding each other. They stopped feeling that they're a part of one family, one nation. This is what Babylon means. This is the transition from the ancient, right kind of society, where we were as one family, into modern society, where we dispersed in all directions, where people felt no longer a connection between them, but to the contrary. Like it says in the Torah about Abraham, you go right, we go left, let's part, so we won't start fighting over some piece of land. And then, artificially, we as human beings try to build some kind of system of values that will protect us. Today we're doing everything that way, by the book meaning. Yeah, everyone needs a lawyer. But this is a very interesting point, because really, when you look at organizations, societies, we see that even though that there is a very organized list of values, we all know that it's very hard for us to keep these values. There's a vast gap between what we'd like or how we'd like for things to be and what we can really realize in terms of the values. The gap is only going and growing. And so what happens is that, like today, we're dealing with a situation where we feel it's called the loss of values. We've lost our way, kind of. We've lost our values as a society. And the question is, what is going on with us today, where we're at least intellectually more developed, that we lost our values? How? We're not a nation. Suppose as a universal society, a nation nonetheless, they keep their borders, family, extended family, a few extended families together, villages, cities, there were separate cities. I read that in the city of Kiryat Gat in Israel, a few thousands of years ago, there was a settlement, and they wrote that they no longer see the lights in the direction of Jerusalem, that there was some other city on the way there, that they can no longer see their lights, meaning everyone had an area of their own, but they knew these live here, those live there, as if families. But it was no longer families, it was more extended, like a small village and so on. But today, we have no connection between cities, villages, and afterwards, when they came together into countries, there was no connection between the cities within a country, and today I can altogether move from country to country and we see what's going on with the world. In this kind of reality, will we have to define universal values, social values, because there are no borders, because everyone can live anywhere? Here we stumble upon several problems. First of all, in order to reach a state where everything's open, you have to reach a state where everyone knows, understands, and accepts everyone else. But in the meantime, in the world, you have many different kinds of religion, languages, mentality, different habits and customs from generations ago, about how to get married, live your life, bury someone, everything. Some time has to go by if you want to reach an open world, if you want for people to be open with each other. So, suppose there are values that are considered to be universal values, like the right for freedom, things like that. Suppose a certain part of society respects it to some extent, and another part that come from other parts in the world don't respect these values. And then what you have is that you have no nation. Not only that there's no nation, but there are very hard social problems that erupt, and we see this a lot around the world. Suppose if there's a certain group of people that reaches a certain society, like in Europe or someplace, that where seemingly certain values are being respected, but the people that come there, they don't respect these values. To the contrary. And then maybe we aspire for it. Global values, but in practice it doesn't happen. Suppose a certain society has certain social values. I'm an individual in that society. How does the fact that the society that I live in, that they have certain social values, how does it shape my behavior as an individual? The influence of the environment over a person. Whether you like it or not, you're influenced by the environment. It could be a hostile environment or a friendly environment, but it influences you. And what do the values of society do to my behavior? You accept them, whether you like it or not. Why? Because they're stronger than you. You live within them, you're afraid of their influence, of the pressure, of the coercion. And you have no choice, you gradually agree, to some extent, you change. Because compared to society, you're the one that's harmed all the time. So social values, they pressure each individual in society, and because the power of society is stronger than the power of the individual, then social values coerce every individual in society to keep them, realize them. Yeah. Now, in the world, there are different societies, countries, and so on, that have different values. There are common values, but also there are differences. Why does a certain society respect these values and another society respects other values? This comes from the point of their soul. Each and every nation has their spiritual place, each and every nation of the 70 nations of the world. And therefore, each nation in the world has its own spiritual basis. That this is where all this phenomenon of mentality and behaviors and so on come from. It's not random. No. Suppose Eastern teachings, a very strong value there is compassion. So it has to do with their spiritual root. Let's talk about our future values. Today we're in a certain general state of loss of values. There are several universal values, but in general, when you look at things, we're losing our values. The way you see it, what are the values that we have to adopt as a society in order to be able to exist? I think that all of our values, or practically all of our values, they're not good. They're false. We can't hold on to them because they're not true. Because we can't hold on to them, we can't keep them. And we have to understand what are the true values that an open, integral society can adopt and really exist in a good kind of development. And so we reach a state where there is no greater value than the connection of love between people. And the connection of love, meaning that I accept the other almost like or like myself, this is a necessary kind of connection if we want to see a future development where there are more people and that we're all connected and so on. We have to reach a state where for me, no one's a stranger. I have to develop toward everyone a friendly attitude, relation. I'm not talking about love yet, but that person has his place in the world, and I respect it. This true value that you mentioned, did it exist? Did it always exist? Is it something new? It didn't always exist. It's a new value. As a result of us developing into a state where we're becoming really interconnected, interdependent. And so we're reaching a state where we're all becoming like one body, like one mechanism, like one system. That in this system, we're so dependent on one another that no one can make the tiniest action without it influencing all the rest. And therefore, we have to understand each other, feel each other, relate to each other with understanding and friendship, to know how to concede. And all in all these things lead us to a sentence called, love another as yourself. That I know the other's weaknesses and values, and I accept them. And he acts the same way toward me. And this way, we can exist together. And furthermore, reach great achievements. So the value of love another as yourself is something that's been around for thousands of years. Maybe it's been around, but not consciously. It's not something that we're aware of. You know, it's written. So as a social value, it was written thousands of years ago. How do we take this value of love another as yourself and realize it? That this is actually what we're missing. Not the value itself, but its realization, if I understand correctly. So in general, what's the process in the 3 minutes we have left? What is this process where you take this value and you make it come alive? You realize it between people through education, where we take all the people in the world from all around the world with all the kinds of media that we have in our hands, and we start doing one thing: to explain from morning till evening, from evening till morning, to everyone in their own language, through thousands of examples and in different ways, through songs and texts and movies and theater and dance and whatnot, through anything that influences a person, we have to explain to people what is the good and nice connection that we have to achieve in the connection between us, all of us. And the rest of the forms of connection that are less than that, it's something that for us is unacceptable. If we do that, if we go in this direction, then there is hope of reaching true social values and a whole nice, good, complete, and perfect world. If not, since our ego is growing every moment and everyone, positioning us on a path of collision with one another, then we'll simply reach a state where we will eat each other, kill each other, destroy each other, the way it used to be thousands and thousands of years ago, in, if you can call it that way, human society. So this is my last question. Social values come because people stopped feeling that they're one family. When you say that today you want to realize the value of love another as yourself, it kind of closes a circle of all of us being one family, even though that we're not. Just like we were a family in the beginning of creation, it has to be now the same way, only between 10 billion people. And this through education. It's like you have a family that suddenly grew. And you see that there's a kind of lack of connection. The ties inside the family are kind of becoming looser in the extended family. What do you do? You have to talk about it. You have to get them together. This is what we have to do in humanity. Dr. Lightman, are you optimistic? I'm optimistic that the forces of nature will force us to do this, meaning we'll have to come to that. Yeah, there will be problems and troubles, and we'll have to do it one way or another. Thank you very much. Thank you, Nitsa. Thank you for being with us. Till next time, all the best.